We're going to move on to the next public hearing, a little bit out of sequence to accommodate some coming and goings by committee members and others. We're going to open the public hearing on LD 738. Welcome, Representative.
Hello, sign-in sheet?
We don't have a sign-in sheet, but you can put your testimony in the basket and it'll get distributed.
Senator Carney, Representative Kuhn, and esteemed members of the Committee on Judiciary, my name is Representative David Boyer, and I'm proud to introduce LD 738. LD 738 would establish an alternative path towards becoming a lawyer by creating a law office study program. I am reintroducing this bill after it was narrowly defeated last session. This bill is drafted similarly to the committee amendment supported by the majority of the Judiciary Committee in the 131st Legislature. As members around this horseshoe well know, Maine's judicial system is facing a crisis. There is a shortage of lawyers. Whether it's a shortage of lawyers to prosecute or lawyers to defend, it's clear that our current approach is not addressing the backlog of cases fast enough. As of last month, there were over 22,000 cases pending around our state. Rural lawyers are in even more demand, with fewer and fewer Main Street lawyers hanging their shingle, leaving Mainers without representation. This shortage has real-world consequences for the accused as well as their community. The shortage has forced judges to decide when this lack of representation becomes a constitutional violation. In one well-known instance last year, a judge in my local community ruled that after an individual had been jailed for 3 weeks without bail and without an attorney, this represented a constitutional violation, and as a response, his bail was lowered and he was thus able to make bail. A few days later, the individual violated his release conditions, went to an ex-girlfriend's home with a gun, and started a fire that killed a man and burned down several homes. The individual was killed during a shootout with police at the scene. I don't bring this up to criticize the judge, but rather to highlight the dire situation our state is facing. If our judges are being put in this untenable position, we must explore all options to solve this crisis. Unfortunately, in Maine, there's only one path towards becoming a lawyer. This path requires moving to the most expensive city in the state, living there for 3 years. This path does not allow studying during the nighttime or online. There's no satellite campuses. I've talked to folks across the state who'd love to further their legal profession, but they simply cannot afford to move to Portland and take on the student debt. States like California, Washington, and Vermont allow people to take the bar exam without a law school degree. Maine already allows individuals who have completed 2/3 of law school and worked under an attorney for 1 year to sit for the bar. However, my understanding is that this has rarely been used, if ever. LD 738 expands this approach by removing the partial law school requirement, making it more accessible while still ensuring hands-on training under experienced lawyers. This legislation offers one more tool for Maine to address the lawyer shortage, along with other steps this committee and legislature have taken thus far. There are appropriate guardrails established by the committee last session, including the following. As prereqs, applicants to the law office study program must have achieved a bachelor's degree from an accredited college or university or have worked as a paralegal for the equivalent of 4 years on a full-time basis. The program requirements include completing 4 years of legal study designed for the general practice of law. Supervising judges or attorneys must be a member of the Maine Bar in good standing for at least 3 years before the applicant's legal study may begin. Supervising judges or attorneys may enlist the assistance of other judges and attorneys to provide additional supervision. And reports are due every 6 months to the Board of Bar Examiners that detail the areas of study pursued and tasks performed by the applicant, as well as the applicant's plan of study for the next 6 month period. This bill considers people who have made practice in other states or countries by allowing partial credit for up to 2 of the 4 years of study if their work is substantially equivalent to the legal study requirements. Additionally, it takes into account students who may have started law school but did not finish. After these requirements are met, an applicant then would be eligible to take the Maine bar exam. If we have decided that the Maine bar exam is how we measure a potential lawyer's competency, it should not matter if that person went to law school or studied as an apprentice. The apprenticeship model reduces financial barriers, opening the profession to a broader, more diverse talent pool that better reflects Maine's communities. This bill preserves law school as a valuable option while adding a practical alternative for those who need it most. It's about raising opportunities, not lowering standards. I appreciate the committee's consideration and would be happy to answer any questions. And I wanted to just walk through some of the supporting documents attached to my testimony. The first one is from the state on the change in pending cases on one side, and then the current pending cases on the other. You see that we do have the 22,446 current pending cases over the statewide. And on the back, it shows how we've tackled this over the last year, February 24 to 25. And, statewide, we've knocked out 10% or so difference. This is not enough. It's not a high enough clip. People are languishing in jail, and we're skirting around the margins here. And I know you all well know that very well, so I don't mean to belabor the point. But there is urgency here. The other document is a Law 360 article about this alternative path, different states. It details a Supreme Court justice in Vermont who went about it this way. So I urge you to read that. It provides some context. And I also would direct you to some of the charts as well that show one, the apprentices is a tiny fraction of the bar exam, so it's not a threat to the monopoly that Maine law has right now. And that they have a tough time on the bar exam. If you, the second chart shows pass rates are lower for the apprenticeship model. In California, one of the hardest ones, it's a lot lower. And then states like Vermont, Virginia, and Washington, it's a little bit closer. And I think that kind of proves my argument is that the bar is the bar, and we wouldn't be letting in non-capable lawyers if they don't make it through that threshold. And the final article is from the BDN, well, actually the Maine Monitor, from last year, last summer. And it kind of just, I thought it was more good context. You know, the Supreme Court here in Maine's asking the big law firms to help out, and some are helping, with pro bono stuff or taking on these cases, but they're also arguing that they're not the most well-equipped to take on some of these defense cases as they're not experts at that part of the law. So I include that one just to show that, some things are working, some things aren't, and this is a really complicated issue to make sure we have justice for all Mainers. So I appreciate the committee's consideration today. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for Representative Boyer? Representative Henderson? Oh, sorry.
Why not?
I guess I had a question. I read your testimony to say that the Maine bar exam is the measure of how we measure a potential lawyer's competency. It seems to me right now under law, there are two. It's the bar exam and it's graduating from an accredited law school. So it's...
Well, no, because Maine offers, again, a hybrid model where you don't have to graduate law school. You can do 2 years, and then the third year you can study under a supervising attorney. Previous legislatures surely contemplated the value of this type of model. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, it hasn't been used in our state, I think, ever. I think we learned that from the last work session in the 131st. We need to expand on that intent that the legislature before us had that foresight to understand that not every kid, or rather student, learns the same way, and that there's multiple paths towards becoming a lawyer. But again, I guess I would, you're not going to become a lawyer if you graduate Maine law. You'll become a lawyer when you pass the bar. So I think that's the threshold we've established. And I don't know that we would say that every lawyer ever come out of law school is ethical or I guess the current situation would presume that there's no bad lawyers. And I don't know that we would agree with that either, right?
Thank you. Are there further questions, committee members? All right, not seeing any, thank you. Are there any individuals in the room who'd like to testify in support of this legislation? Please come to the podium. I believe we do not have anyone on Zoom at this time. Is there anyone here in the room who'd like to testify in opposition?
Thank you, Representative Kuhn and members of the Judiciary Committee. This testimony was written by the Chief Justice of the state of Maine in opposition to this bill. It's a little longer and maybe a little more scholarly than the type of testimony that we would ordinarily submit. So I ask you to bear with me in length. I'm not going to read it all with all those case citations. And the Chief Justice does apologize that she couldn't be here in person, but she thought this was important enough that she be the one to speak out against this bill. Senator Carney, Representative Kuhn, and members of the Joint Standing Committee on Judiciary, I am Chief Justice Valerie Stanfield. Order. An analysis of the issue of regulation of attorneys must begin with recognition that at the foundation of our form of government, there are three co-equal branches, and that our form of government at the state as well as the federal level embraces the doctrine of the separation of powers. In the area of the admission of attorneys to the practice of law, the judicial branch of the government, acting through the courts, has exclusive jurisdiction, and I repeat, exclusive jurisdiction, and the legislative branch, acting through the legislature, can in no way limit this inherent power and authority of the court. The legislature has enacted statutes which regulate attorneys, for MRSA Section 803 is such a statute, but the court has enforced statutes designed to regulate the licensure of attorneys, a subject squarely within the realm of judicial interest and authority, as a matter of comity, but not in surrender of the judiciary's inherent power. These statutes purporting to regulate the admission of attorneys to the practice of law in Maine are not exclusive. Such provisions are an aid of the authority and power inherent in the court. But in this area, the judicial branch of the government, acting through the courts, has exclusive jurisdiction, and the legislative branch, acting through the legislature, can in no way limit this inherent power of the courts. Courts, however, may and frequently do so honor implementation legislation, but clearly are not bound to do so. Bar Admission Rule 2 provides that the bar admission rules are intended to provide fair and efficient procedures and standards for determination of the qualifications to practice law of applicants for admission to the bar. The admission requirements included in the rules, aside from the need for good character, include criteria designated to show an appropriate level of legal proficiency. LD 738 contains little in the way of guardrails ensuring any level of legal proficiency. It may be that an alternative to graduation from an ABA-accredited school can be developed that could provide the court with confidence in that alternative, but this is not that statute. Putting aside the separation of powers issue and turning to the substance, I also note that significant practical concerns. It would be difficult for a supervising attorney, as described in the bill, to cover the breadth of topics that are offered in law school. We note that the role of supervising attorney is a significant commitment of time and resources to training and teaching a prospective attorney. Because lawyers make their living by charging for their time, it is not clear that anyone would be willing to undertake this role without being compensated for the effort. LD 738 is devoid of any mention of compensation. This situation could lead to supervisees being exploited or charged fees for an inferior course of study that fails to provide them with the necessary knowledge needed to pass the exam.
I have to ask you to wrap it up in a couple sentences,
okay,
if you can.
It's also unclear whether anyone would take advantage of the process. And finally, the implementation of this provision would require significant time by the Maine Board of Bar Examiners to oversee the supervision requirements. For the most part, serve as volunteers. Fees paid for admission to the bar provide for very limited sources, and we would have to The law court, the Supreme Judicial Court, would have to raise fees significantly in order to meet the criteria for appropriate supervision. And the Supreme Judicial Court would consider the cost of implementing the program in considering whether to adopt the program. So in sum, we urge the Judiciary Committee to vote on not to pass on this bill.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Cardone? Representative Hagan. Sorry, Senator Hagan.
So is there anything in the top of your mind that you didn't, and thank you for coming, that you didn't get to?
There was a lot more explanation and legal citations in here. I ran through most of it quickly, but the big deals are the jurisdiction element. So this is not going to be implemented if the Supreme Judicial Court votes not to do it. And from the tenor of the rest of the testimony, I think you can figure which way that may go. Really big concern about the supervision requirements and lawyers pay law student or students having to pay lawyers for their time. And we don't have the means to implement this program with the appropriate oversight that this would take at this time.
Are there other questions? Representative Sinclair.
Good morning.
Good morning.
To see you again. And I recognize that this is not your testimony, but rather the Chief Justice's, but you're here, so I'll put the questions to you.
Fair enough.
It feels to me like each time we have a bill before us that tries to address in a substantive way the current backlog that we are all suffering under, but particularly that the judicial branch is in the middle of. It feels like the first red flag that the branch waves is, hey, hey, separation of powers. We have deep respect for the separation of powers, and yet I'm curious whether the branch recognizes that we are failing right now to meet the very reasonable expectations of the public, and that what has been done is a big contributor to that failure. Is the branch cognizant and self-aware of that challenge that we are trying to help the branch grapple with and hopefully move past?
I believe in her State of the Judiciary speech, not this year, but the previous year, the Chief Justice used exactly that word. We are failing in our ability to deliver access to justice. There are many ways in which the legislature can assist with that. But as it pertains to this particular bill, I'll keep my testimony focused on this bill, having lawyers with a subpar education is not one of the ways we want to go about that. And in fact, the Chief Justice didn't get into this in her testimony, but I know she is aware that there is a significant amount of research and review being done that actually talks about doing away with the bar exam altogether, because the bar exam isn't a great measure of how good you become as a lawyer. What is a really good measure is graduating from a law school, or at least going to law school for 2 years. That's where the education occurs, to put somebody in this type of program, even if they do manage to get past the bar exam, is really not the answer if what they are delivering is a subpar legal advice.
Representative, go ahead.
I appreciate your mentioning, or I appreciate you as the Chief Justice mentioning the possibility of a subpar education. And I think in your testimony in chief, you mentioned the possibility of students being exploited or charged fees for
yes.
that education, and yet still be ill-prepared to take the exam. Can't the exact same be said for those students who do go to any ABA-accredited school and yet end up not passing the bar? I'm trying to understand how someone who doesn't pass the bar but went to law school compared to someone who perhaps doesn't pass the bar but studied independently with a licensed attorney, who's worse off and why?
I'm not sure. I think that goes a little bit beyond the scope of this bill, and it may be a philosophical question rather than a question that I can answer for information. It may be possible that someone doesn't gets into law school, graduates, but can't get themselves past the bar. In fact, I've known people who have done that. They at least went to a law school with an accreditation, got a legal education, and where they went from there, I don't know. This particular program, there's so little guidance, there's so few guardrails as to what is being taught, unlike an ABA accredited law school where you know what the requirements are and what's being taught. This one is rife for exploitation.
One more? All right.
Swear this is my last one, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I appreciate that response, and I appreciate the numerous case citations in the testimony, but we're all aware that case citations are always looking backward. And in order to make progress on this roadblock that we all collectively are facing, we're going to need to look forward. And so I'm wondering if the branch would at least be willing to meet with the bill's sponsor and talk with him and see if some progress can be made so that agreement can be reached.
I mean, we're willing to meet and talk with anyone. I don't know if this committee is aware, but there is a bill in front of the Education Committee that the Chief Justice actually testified. She came and testified to that bill. And the bill was put in by Senator Carney and Senator Stewart for an online law school program through the University of Maine. And as the Chief Justice pointed out, she right now for the ABA accreditations, you can't do an entirely online program, but that there are ways that we can make access through an accredited law school via online programs better to be able to reach more people. So that is one area in which the judicial branch is reaching out. The Chief Justice is also a member of a national committee that is looking at law school education and access on exactly these sorts of issues. And so, believe me, we are involved in trying to craft a future. If that's a word that works for you, because you talked about the past, craft a future of the practice of law that gives people better access to a law school education without diminishing the quality of the legal services that will be delivered once they become a lawyer.
Thank you. I would add there are a number of bills, and including one that I have in regarding expanding access to legal education. So it'll be an ongoing conversation, I'm sure. Are there any final questions for Ms. Cardone? Representative Henderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, understanding that there's not one simple fix to this and continuing the education, I'm interested. I know there are other members of this committee that are interested in exploring this avenue. And I would just encourage the judicial branch to sit down with a sponsor and at least see if there is some kind of framework and guardrails that you mentioned that could make this a little bit of a stronger endeavor.
Thank you. All right, no further questions.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the room who would like to speak in opposition to this legislation? Welcome.
Good morning, Representative Kuhn, Senator Carney, members of the Judiciary Committee. My name is Aria E. I'm the Executive Director and General Counsel at the Maine Board of Overseers of the Bar here in Augusta. And what our office does is we regulate lawyers, judges, and guardians ad litem. So we come in after lawyers are admitted to the bar. We share part of the admission process, a very small process, with our colleagues at the Board of Examiners. Their executive director is here as well today. From the Board of Overseers perspective, we align with the Chief Justice's comments in practical opposition to this bill, with all due respect to the work that you're trying to do to address access to justice. There is an access to justice problem in this state. The board of directors for my office understands that. Most of them are lawyers. Three members are public members. They serve their community. I am a lawyer. My first practice was in Washington County, which was an underserved community. One of the practical challenges that I've noticed in the bill and that the board has noticed in the bill is correlates to this access to justice. We can't guarantee that lawyers will go to Washington County or Oxford County or Piscataquis County, which are sorely in need of practitioners. We do have law students now who are not living in Portland and are commuting in. An online program, to buttress Barbara Cardone's comments, an online program will assist in that, in the greater access to education for lawyers. What I wanted to also point out in your definition of good standing in this bill, under the definition of good standing, that can be a lawyer who has been suspended before. So when my office certifies that someone, David Sinclair, is in good standing, that means David Sinclair right now is, and always has been, a lawyer in good standing, right? So that means right now he's actively licensed to practice. He has no impediment to that. If a lawyer's been suspended for neglect or for client theft and they've been reinstated, this is not a punishment regulatory scheme. And so there would have to be several layers of vetting supervisors. And while lawyers can be looked up on our website and searched to see if they've been reprimanded or sanctioned before, that would be a critical element of any bill that's going to include an apprenticeship program. We don't want our next generation of lawyers learning from somebody who has neglected clients. That doesn't serve the public at all. The other issue is, from my review of the judicial canons, I don't believe a judge can supervise an incoming lawyer to the degree that this bill addresses. So to the extent that there are conversations with the judicial branch, with the Board of Examiners, with any other agency that's relevant, that would need to be addressed, along with the practical concern I mentioned about ensuring that the lawyer that is supervising is qualified to supervise, and that the student won't be at risk or the apprentice won't be at risk. The other practical concerns is so many lawyers are not generalists anymore. Perhaps when I started 31 years ago, everyone in Washington County pretty much was a generalist, but some of us still didn't do felonies and some of us still didn't do bankruptcy. You have to refer those out, and we would want to see a much deeper dive into how those responsibilities will be shared. Some of the law firms have done that with their fellowship programs, where they'll move a student from law firm to law firm and they'll learn five or six different areas of study. Another great model right now is what the law school is doing with a couple of other agencies, including, I think, the bar examiners, our office to a lesser degree, although I'm part of that selection process, and the Maine State Bar Association, is these rural access fellowships. So we have 14 students that are going to go into rural areas with supervising attorneys that have been vetted from all of our agencies. And so far that model has proven successful to have at least, I don't know what it's anecdotal from my perspective, but more students staying in those areas or interested in staying in those areas. I think that also warrants some of those communities, Washington County, Piscataquis County, seeing what they can do to attract and retain people to stay in those communities. And then lastly, the chief mentioned some concerns about I'll leave that at this point. I think those are my comments, and thank you for allowing us to speak to this. And really, from our perspective as the Board of Overseers, these are practical challenges that deserve more discussion, and it is a real issue that we are all very cognizant of, this access to justice issue. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Sure.
Committee members, are there any questions? Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my apologies, as this question may not be one that you can answer.
Okay.
However, I did note in the sponsor's testimony that he says that this particular bill takes into account students who may have started law school but did not finish.
Correct.
Of all of the ways that we're thinking about increasing access to justice, this point here about those who have started the education but for a host of reasons do not finish, do you know of anything in place right now that pulls those students back in so that we don't lose their interests, the investment that they already made, their potential for becoming a lawyer? Do you know of any other mechanism that would do that?
Short of somebody taking an interest in them, maybe a local lawyer in their community, encouraging them, and perhaps the law school, and I know my colleague Dimitri Bam is going to testify in a few moments, I'm not aware of that. They could, as you know, Senator, go to 2 years and finish out a third year, and that currently is available to them as a measure. And that may be part of the way that the access to justice is improved in some of these communities where the law student or newer, you know, soon to become lawyer networks with other people in the community, particularly to succeed into someone's practice. I think that's a really good model.
I thank you for answering that way, because what you've helped illustrate for me anyway is that has the onus on the individual, not the system, to recognize that we must put in place things to overcome barriers.
That's
so,
right.
So I appreciate your answer, because it talks about the individual empowerment to continue to go. And this, if I read it correctly, talks about an institutional response. Would you agree? It's rhetorical.
Yes, I assumed as much. I kept quiet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Henderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you be willing to provide your comments to the committee and to the bill sponsor, your suggestions on although you were opposed to it, it seemed as though there may be some suggestions to some language changes.
Sure, certainly. You know, as I said, our board is very cognizant of these challenges. And our remarks are the practical considerations when you're going to go down this road. And there are a lot of solutions, but I do think it has to involve multiple stakeholders to address, you know, for instance, the issue of good standing. What does that mean? To you, it may mean one thing. To me, the technical term is what I described. And so we want to really be protective, both of the student who's going to be apprenticing and also the lawyer, to make certain that that lawyer has the time and can deliver the goods that the student is expecting and that the community is expecting.
Thank you. And I don't know if I specified to share your comments in writing with us would be really helpful.
Oh, sure. I have notes now.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I had the same request.
Okay.
Are there any further questions, committee members? Not seeing any. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.